Welcome to the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy podcast, dedicated to helping the youth of mind and body become the healthiest and wealthiest they can be. You will hear from some of the most incredible minds, whether they be entrepreneur, executive, or influencer alike. I am your host, Chase A.P. Henderson, and without further ado, let's start the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy podcast. I am your host, Chase A.P. Henderson. It feels so good to be back, and we are kicking things off, round two of this podcast, with an amazing, amazing guest. You guys are going to absolutely love this dude, and you're going to love the topic we talk about because we're not starting light. We're going heavy. We're going to be talking about alcohol. We're going to be talking about addiction. We're going to be talking about overcoming that from within and how to lead your life past that, knowing that you can live a life alcohol-free and addiction-free. And what better way to do that than with the man, the myth, actually not the myth because he is here today, but the legend, the stop drinking coach on TikTok and Instagram and everywhere else you can find him, Bardia Rez. Bardia, what's going on, man? How you doing?
What's up, Chase? Doing well, man. Glad to be here.
Dude, I'm so happy to have you on here. One, because I haven't seen you in a long time. It's been a minute. I'm glad we're going to be able to catch up. But two, dude, you've got such an amazing story and you've been able to help so many people with that story and what you've learned. And we can't wait to hear all about it. So what we'll do is we'll start with the boring stuff. So go ahead, tell us who you are, what you do, but more importantly, how and why you do it.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Again, thanks for having me, man. So my name is Bardia Rezai, but I've kind of shortened it to Bardia Rez. And 31 years old, grew up in Southern California. Lived there my whole life and then moved out to Austin, Texas about 18 months ago. And yeah, man, I had a pretty kind of crazy background and story between life growing up, as many of us do, and then with drinking. So kind of digging into that, man, I grew up in a pretty crazy dysfunctional household, like a lot of people. You know, dad was an alcoholic. And really only knew him sober, like Saturday mornings. He was always drinking. There was drugs in the family. There was anything you could possibly conceive in a dysfunctional family. I mean, my family was the epitome of it. You know, mom tried committing suicide, like in front of me, just everything, you know? And so a lot of that, you know, caused some pain inside, right? And so at first, I remember being a teenager, seeing what kind of drugs and alcohol had done to my family and told myself I was never going to go near that stuff. Inevitably, I got into high school and, you know, you start partying. And pretty much the first time I picked up a drink, I became a binge drinker. And I was kind of stuck in that cycle for about 14 years. I tried a lot of different things to quit. I tried to go to AA. I tried to do some therapy and alcohol counseling, but nothing really seemed to work. And yeah, man, eventually it kind of got to the point where for 14 years, I was a weekend binge drinker, or a quote unquote high functioning alcoholic. You know, Monday through Friday, I always took care of my shit, held down good jobs, met most of my responsibilities, honestly didn't look super different from a lot of 20-year-olds who work really hard Monday through Friday. And then when the weekend comes around, you binge and you get obliterated, right? The weekends are revolved around alcohol. But for me, that always caused a ton of distress, right? One thing I saw, what it had done to my family. And on the other piece of that, my entire life, really after my dad passed away, I got really into the world of like personal growth and self-development and success and mindset and psychology and spirituality and philosophy and all of these different things. So half of me was really oriented towards my personal growth and my potential. And I was always trying to better myself. The other half was really addicted to alcohol. And it felt like this kind of deep, dark, dirty little secret. You know, and most people didn't know, right? Because it looked like I had everything together on the outside, but emotionally on the inside, I was just being destroyed. And things got pretty bad once the pandemic came around. And many people, I've talked to hundreds of people over the last few months. If you had a problematic relationship with drinking, it got a lot worse during the pandemic because now you're isolated. Now you're working from home. There's no accountability. right? And I went from being a weekend binge drinker to drinking 4 to 6 bottles of wine and smoking a pack of cigarettes every single day. And it was bad. You know, things just got pretty unsustainable. And I kind of found myself at a rock bottom place. And I told myself if I didn't want, and so I took some deep inventory. I took some real hard self-reflection. And I was 29, I was getting ready to turn 30. And at the same time, I had gotten this opportunity to run the marketing for this coaching company, the company we met through. And I basically told myself, like, this is it. You know, I've been battling this thing for 10 years. I've tried everything in the book. And if I don't want my 30s to be a replica of my 20s, I needed to make a change. And that change was to give up alcohol. In the moment, it was the scariest thing I could have possibly conceived within everything, right? I mean, the social life, all of it, it was so deeply woven into every aspect of my life. But what I realized on the other side is that I gave up one thing to gain everything back. I gained back my potential. Everything in my life improved. And, you know, I made the move. I kind of left everything behind in California, moved to Austin, and immersed myself in a coaching environment, became a coach, learned a lot, grew a lot, healed a lot, expanded my map of reality, improved my relationship with myself, improved my relationship with the world. And yeah, and after leaving that coaching company, I told myself I'm gonna become a coach and I'm gonna start fulfilling my potential. And sobriety coaching kind of fell into my lap. And when it did, everything started to make sense. It's as if all of the pieces and dots in my life connected and aligned. And I'm like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And so I started this brand on TikTok. It's called @StopDrinkingCoach, and really it took off. And yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I've got it's wild.
No kidding. Yeah, I mean, you have absolutely blown up. I think it was only like what, 6-12 months ago since you started up, and already you are becoming like a major figure on social media when it comes to this topic specifically, when it comes to alcoholism and addiction and overcoming that and doing so in a very different way, which is I'm really excited because you laid out a lot. And I want to dig into everything you've been talking about so far. One of the big things is, you know, you went down, you came back up, and then COVID hit and you went down again. But it didn't take 14 years to kind of make this change and make the decision to get back in on the right horse or the wagon, whatever term you want to use. What was it that really it snapped? Because I know you said you didn't want to repeat your 20s, and I thought that was huge. But what was that moment where it was just like, okay, yeah, this is the time? Because I know I've had my moment when I had my struggles with alcoholism. I remember waking up one morning and I had Taco Bell on my shirt from the night out before, and I had left the shower on all night. My roommates were banging on my door, dude, you left the shower on all night. And I look in the mirror, I was not a high functioning alcohol. I was a mess. I looked in the mirror, I'm like, oh, dude, you look awful. You feel awful. All right, this has got to stop. And that was like the moment for me. What was that moment for you where you realized and it kind of snapped for you, that whole revelation of not repeating your 20s? When did that happen? What was that?
That's a great question, man. And so, yeah, that was my rock bottom sort of experience. And so, yeah, during the pandemic, I slowly transitioned from the weekends to every day. And then the volumes just kept increasing. And during the tail end of it, you know, I was throwing up. I was like getting sick. I mean, the hangovers like were just insanely brutal, right? Just like 4 to 6 bottles of wine is a lot. It's a lot of sugar. It's an incredible amount of alcohol. You throw cigarettes onto that. And so my body was just banged up. But what really was like what kind of the straw that broke the camel's back was I was at the pool and I was with, you know, a couple friends at the time, and we decided to like race, and I had been drinking all day. And like, I don't know, I pride myself on my swimming. Like, I feel like I'm a pretty fast swimmer. I usually beat everybody who I swim up against. And, you know, I was drinking and my ego was inflated. And I was like, dude, I'll crush you, you know? So we start racing and I ended up like re-injuring or dislocating my left shoulder. So in high school football, I dislocated my left shoulder and it like popped out and it was a mess. And for, you know, for 10 years almost, it really hadn't bothered me. But one thing I did notice was when I was drinking all that alcohol, my back and my posture and just everything was breaking down because of how much poison I was pouring into my body. And I remember at the time my shoulder was feeling weird. And while we were swimming really aggressively, my shoulder literally like ripped out of its socket and it was excruciatingly painful. Like I tried to come up out of the water and I couldn't lift it out of the water. Like the water was the gravity of like the whatever was I don't know, man. And it was out for what seemed like, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes. And I was just trying to figure out how to pop it back in. And it was just excruciating. And like, yeah, man, it finally fell back in. And I put it in a sling. And then I woke up the next day and I literally could not move it one fraction of an inch in any direction, one fraction of any inch into any direction. And it was 15 out of 10 pain. So I went to the emergency room and I mean, they didn't do much. They're just like, yeah, ice it, take care of it, put it in a sling. Don't mess with it. And so it was that moment where I was like, yeah, I mean, this, like, I'm just hurting myself now. Like, obviously I was hurting myself a lot of different ways from the alcohol, but it was hurting my shoulder where it just kind of like, it scared me. It woke me up. Cause I was like, dude, this could have been a car accident. This could have been me hurting someone else.
Right. Yeah. So in that case, you know, best case scenario, even though it still hurt a lot, but you know, that's a massive point to be able to like, oh, you don't realize that alcohol not only is hurting you internally, because you can't see that and you can't feel it for a long
time. Yeah, you don't see your liver, you know, developing fat on it. You don't see it. Exactly. You don't see the discoloration. You don't see the gray matter in your brain and the white matter in your brain shrinking and getting holes in it.
Yeah, you know? No kidding. But you can definitely see your arm in a sling. That you can definitely see. And so on that point too, kind of diving more into, you know, how alcohol can hurt. You know, because we know that it's hurting us internally, right? It hurts us internally, physically. We know that it's going to do that. And sometimes we get externally hurt. We know that. Yet we still continue to do it. I mean, what, from your experience, from yourself and then working with so many other people, why do we continue to do that? Why do we continue to hurt ourselves knowing that it is hurting ourselves?
Yeah, dude, that's the $1 million question, right? And I mean, that's addiction effectively, right? Addiction is a compulsive behavior, which you know is hurting you and you try to stop it, but you can't. I mean, that's like the effective definition of addiction. And so why do we do it? Well, number one, I mean, it's multifaceted, right? It's with, especially with alcohol, right? There's the emotional and mental regulation piece. There's like the trauma piece, there's the coping piece, there's the social piece, there's the friends piece, there's the fitting in, the society, there's the social anxiety piece. That's why overcoming alcohol on your own feels virtually impossible, because people think that not that quitting drinking is about physically stopping. That's like 10% of it, right? And really, that's the easy part. The more challenging part is all of the other psychological pieces that somebody has to address and work through and change their mindset about and confront and begin healing in order for them to sustainably live an alcohol-free life. And so what is it? I mean, one, alcohol is incredibly physically and emotionally addictive, and people don't realize that, right? There is no formal education throughout the school system anywhere, right? Like the only thing humans get is the little DARE class in fifth grade that says stay off drugs, right? They introduce alcohol, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamines, and they show some people who are struggling on the street, and they're like, this is what happens if you'll do that. And that's it, right? It's pretty sad, honestly, especially because I can't tell you how many 18, 19, 20, 21 year olds reach out to me, like very young people who have their entire life ahead of them and are like, this thing is crushing my soul and I feel trapped. You know, so it's we think it's like all fun and games, but it's really not. And so getting back to it, like alcohol is incredibly physically and emotionally addictive because it secretes a ton of dopamine in the brain. And dopamine is the neurotransmitter that makes you feel rewarded and motivated and euphoric, right? And so cocaine is at like the very top of the list, but alcohol really isn't that far off. And most people don't know that, right? Because of the way that it's marketed to us as just this fun, cool, relaxing thing that sophisticated people do, you know, have some after work, kick back, relax. Like this is all just marketing. It's a facade, right? In order to get people to drink. I mean, alcohol companies are raking in tens of billions of dollars of profit. And, you know, effectively 30 to 40% of the population has developed alcohol use disorder, but doesn't even really know it because of the fact that it's literally ingrained and woven into the fabric of almost every social interaction. It's in most songs. It's in almost every movie. The main character, the hero, is drinking it. I mean, it is wild. It's like, it is almost like water to a fish, and we don't even realize it. And so why do we do it despite knowing it's bad? One, because many people are physically and emotionally addicted, right? And number two, the reason we turn to alcohol, right? It's not even about the alcohol. It has to do with how we process reality. It's our mental and our emotional regulation. And so when people experience trauma in their early childhood or in their adolescence, or at any point, right? Maybe they're 25 or 30, they haven't drank in their whole life, but then they get into a marriage, they end up finding out that the person they're with is maybe a narcissist and they experience all this pain. Then they go through this brutal divorce and she starts drinking wine as an example. I mean, this is a very, very common case. And I've talked to many clients who have been through something like this, right? And so they're using wine or they're using alcohol as a way to cope because there's an uncomfortable feeling inside them, right? It's like, if we just knew and had the ability to properly manage our mind and we had healthy ways of discharging uncomfortable emotions, we wouldn't need to turn to a toxic substance to drown ourselves and to disconnect and numb. So yeah, I mean, there's a million different ways that alcohol will trap you. For many, you know, there's also a portion of the population who maybe didn't experience a ton of trauma or a ton of pain, maybe came from a good family, a good set of parents. They got the emotional support that they needed. And they just start drinking in high school and college because it's the social and fun thing to do, right? And so again, the more that you drink it, especially when you increase quantity and frequency, the more likely you are to become dependent on it because alcohol literally remodels the reward pathways in your brain. And eventually, because your brain and physiology gets used to getting these huge spikes of dopamine, these huge euphoric feelings from alcohol, unconsciously, the way your brain becomes patterned is that it will then start to prioritize those reward pathways over the alternative reward pathways, which includes receiving just natural levels of dopamine through progress we make in every normal day-to-day life, like working hard, going to the gym, leveling up in your career, acquiring new skills, you know, looking for a mate, like whatever it might be. It changes the way that your brain and mind works in the background and you don't even know it until you're kind of stuck in its grips.
Man, that is true. I mean, every bit of that. I mean, because you have those people, like you said, that are emotionally and physically addicted. You have the dopamine fluctuations, because I remember that, where it was like nothing excited me anymore. And if I ever felt bad, I would drink this depressant, which made me feel good for a bit. And then he brings you back down again. You're like, oh no, and I got to get a little bit more. And then brings you back. So you're stuck in that behavioral cycle. Dopamine loop. Yeah. Mm. And then also another thing, which I was very intrigued and very excited to talk to you about specifically, was the social aspect of it. Like you said, it is in movies and TV shows. You have celebrities that have their massive new like brands these days. And then it's also seen as cool. And I know, like, for me specifically, like when I was in college, it was cool to drink. I was in a fraternity. It was even cooler to drink a lot. So when it comes to, you know, you're working with these people and they're trying to overcome, you know, their addictions, like you said, it's the stopping the drinking. That's the easy part. But then there's all the other parts that you kind of don't realize until you don't have alcohol. One of those being the social aspect and, you know, quote unquote, fitting in, because everybody just wants to fit in. And we do that with alcohol. It's a social lubricant. So when you go about working with your clients and, you know, making your content, doing your podcast, when it comes to that social interactive piece, how do you guide people through that? Because I know with me, I just cut myself out socially completely and like just didn't hang out with people for years because I was like, all I know to do is drink and go out and that's it. So how do you guide those people through that process of kind of reintegrating themselves back into a social setting that is now healthier for them, or if they can revisit that old setting, but still act in a way that's they're able to repress those addictive feelings towards alcohol?
That's a great question, man. And I'm glad you asked that because I think that's a common one that we all think about or want to have answers to address as we approach this. So when it comes to the social piece, one of the things that if we want to embark on this journey and be successful, one of the things that we have to realize is that because of how addictive physically and emotionally alcohol is, in the beginning, you're going to have to make some adjustments, right? Like the way I see it is at least for the first 90 days, you want to audit your decision-making through the lens of sobriety. So is this going to support my sobriety and helping me stay alcohol-free? Or is this going to put me at risk and potentially put me in a situation where I could start drinking again, right? Because if you're trying to escape this cycle, you have to understand that like it takes work and it takes some commitment, you know? It's everywhere, right? So if you want to no longer be a slave to alcohol running your life, you have to kind of go to war with it. So for the first 90 days, I tell my clients, let's prioritize our sobriety, number one, and optimize for sobriety. So that may mean we kind of distance ourselves from drinking buddies or people who drink a lot or people we used to drink a lot with. Maybe we avoid going to certain places like bars or clubs or wherever where we're used to drinking. And yeah, we kind of want to do that for the first few months, because if we don't, you know, we're going to get tempted again, right? And in order to get to a place where you can finally have a good foundation within your identity as a non-drinker and all these things, you have to avoid those things for a while so that you can do the deep work on yourself and solidify that foundation. Over time, you can begin reintegrating into those things. But what happens is that this happens with almost everybody, right? People think, okay, so a couple things to address here. Number one, people think that by giving up alcohol or quitting drinking, and I don't even like the word giving up alcohol because it seems like you're losing something. You're actually gaining everything back, right? So by quitting drinking, people think that their social life is over. But here's the reality. Is that you can do everything that you would normally do drinking without pouring alcohol down your mouth. You can be in the same places. You could still go to barbecues. You could still go to birthday parties. You could still, you know, go wherever, right? You can go on a boat. You can go to events, charities, whatever you do that's part of your lifestyle. You can still do that, but just not pour alcohol into your mouth. Now, what happens is for everybody who gets sober and decides to quit drinking is that over time, your values begin to change, right? There is a biological adaptation that each and every one of us goes through, right? Because before, people who drink derive their sense of fulfillment and fun from like being in a bar for 4 or 5 hours, right? Or bar hopping. You can still go to the bar with your friends and get that social connection, but most people who drink, who don't drink, you find that after about an hour, hour and a half, like you're good, right? Like you show face, you have some conversation, whatever. Usually by hour, hour and a half, people are on their third, fourth, maybe fifth drink, and the conversation starts to change, the quality of it starts to diminish, the jokes stop being funny, people are laughing at things and talking about things that like you normally wouldn't talk about with a sober mind. And so you can literally watch like the fabric and personality of people change. And so you're like, all right, guys, I'm good. And so you'll typically just leave, right? Rather than being out at the bar or at the social event until midnight, 1, 2 o'clock, you're there for an hour, hour and a half, you make face, you get your social connection, you get your fix there. And then you drive home and you don't have to worry about driving, drinking and driving. You go to sleep peacefully, you get a great night's rest, and then you wake up bright and early, refreshed and ready to go about your day. And so with the social piece, it's like, you know, in the beginning, we just want to audit and make some adjustments, but it's not like that forever. And that's the big thing to realize with drinking, right? Even you notice this as somebody who doesn't really drink anymore. And I have a podcast episode about this as well. It's this journey is front loaded with some pain and discomfort, but on the back end, it's everything that you've ever dreamed of and imagined. Right. So the anxiety, the boredom, the whatever discomforts, the having to confront some of the pain, like it's not like that forever, right? You're not going to be bored for the rest of your life. Like, yeah, maybe the first couple weeks or the first month, you know, Friday and Saturday night, you're used to going out, you know, you're going to have to maybe stay in, or you go get some ice cream, or you go on a hike, or you do an evening yoga class, or you throw on a movie and, you know, order some Uber Eats. Like, there's different ways to manage and get through it, but eventually your dopamine levels come back. The body starts gaining clarity. It starts going back into homeostasis. Your anxiety is reduced. Your depression is reduced. And you just go back to being like a normal functioning human, before you started drinking, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And something to note that you said, I got to say, it's completely underrated. But waking up early after a night with friends is one of the best feelings in the world. Love it. Waking up at like 6-7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. Woo! You have not lived until you've woken up at 6 a.m. on a Sunday. That is one of the best feelings.
Totally. And like, yeah, you say that to half the population and that sounds absolutely insane. But like waking up, ass crack of dawn, 5 or 6 a.m. on like a Saturday or Sunday, getting up, doing some meditation, you know, some breath work, having your coffee, like, you know, sitting out, looking out your patio or balcony, like it's one of the most beautiful, peaceful and serene experiences that you can have.
Oh yeah. Big time. And so something to note there too, you had said, you know, doing that, something that feels so good and feels so natural, like getting up and enjoying your morning, other people will look at that as crazy. Right. So now is that other piece of, not only is it, you're trying to fit in, but now that you have stopped drinking, and I've experienced this where like people are like, what happened to the fun chase? Right. Like now people will like, they'll put you down.
Right.
They'll put you down for not being fun, for not drinking, for not going out, for not doing these things. And they will, and it's been years. And like, I still have friends who still get on me about it. So like for those who are going through that, because that can be very painful for some, like seeing their close friends, like putting them down like that. How do you tell, you know, these people to get around that? Because that can be a very hard piece. Not only are you not quote unquote fitting in at night, but now it's outside of that and people are talking about you in a negative way. How do you go about it?
Man, that's another awesome question. Chase, you're just on fire with all the good questions, man.
I'm trying, man. Hey, you're getting real, so it's all you.
So yeah, a couple of things to keep in mind here based on the context of that question and situation. Number one, your real friends, the ones that are truly authentic, aren't going to make fun of you, right? Like the ones that care about you, like I care about you, Chase, as a person. I'm like, if you decide to stop drinking, even if we used to drink together, like I might be like, damn, Chase, remember when we used to get crazy? Like I'll maybe reminisce on those, but I'm not going to like, you know, dog you for it and be like, you know, I miss the old Chase. Where's like, people who do that aren't really your real friends. Those are your kind of your drinking buddies, your party friends, right?
Yeah.
And that might be a hard pill to swallow for some people, especially younger people, right? The other thing is, you know, when it comes to like people judging you, you just have to realize with this alcohol thing is that, I mean, what are our two options? One, we keep drinking and destroying ourselves, destroying our mental health, waking up in this slave-like existence of shame and guilt and pain, ruining our cognitive function, you know, slowing our brain down, gaining weight, getting fat, like losing money. Like, what's more important? Getting your life back on track and doing what feels right and good to you so that you can evolve and fulfill your potential as a human being, or not having your friends mad at you, right? And so that's like the serious question that you have to ask yourself, right? And especially this plagues younger people, because when you're young, you really care about the opinions of other people, right? Like the whole social aspect of life is like kind of the main thing when you're a teenager or when you're a young adult, let's say in your early to mid 20s. So there is a lot of fear that comes along with that. But the thing you just ultimately have to realize is that the decision to quit drinking alcohol and to better yourself, that's a personal decision. And if anybody wants to go out there and try to put you down for it, that has nothing to do with you, and it's a reflection of their level of consciousness and mindset and perception of life, right? And it's a projection of their own fears and insecurities. You know, a lot of people, when they see others quit drinking, it reminds them of their own problem with alcohol. And that's a deep one. And it can be triggering for some people, and they won't directly admit it. But the way that you can tell is by them putting you down, because they want to try to bring you back to where they're at so they don't have to feel like you're passing them up or that they're doing this thing alone now. That's the deeper, darker kind of psychology of it, which is true. But, you know, that's just kind of, that's how it is, you know?
How it is, yeah. And something to note on that for anybody listening who is going through that and is having a, you know, and I think that was very important, that piece that you mentioned where it highlights in them. Oh, that was fire. I have to clip that out and send that to you for content. But it's going to highlight within them their problems with alcohol. And what you might be surprised to see is like a lot of people are going to put you down, right? But you might have, I've had one person do this and I thought it was the coolest thing ever, where somebody came up to me, they were blasted, right? But they came up to me and they admitted that they had a problem and they saw how I had quit and how I'm staying strong in this space. And like, you know, thanks man. Like, how do you do it? Like for those of you listening, like if you take that decision, you could inspire others to make the decision as well. Right? Like Bardia, you took that decision to get clean and get better. And then you started to put that out into the world. And now you've inspired what, like over 100,000 people on TikTok to follow you alone. And then probably millions of people to like your content. Like, that's huge. And all it takes is that one brave step to actually go towards that and decide, you know what, I do have a problem with this and I'm going to do something about it. That's a tough decision to make. But once you do, it's still tough when you're recovering from it, but it does get better on the other side. So anybody listening, I do want to highlight that to you, because that can happen. And I think that's massive. And you've been able to do that at scale. So of course, you know that.
Yeah, man, that's a really great point that you bring up. And that's the thing that almost all of us realize through this journey is that, number one, everybody kind of drinks, right? And so when you decide to transform your life and live alcohol free, in the beginning, you might get a little bit of ridicule, or you might get some judgment, or people asking you like, oh, is something wrong with you, or all those kind of silly questions, right? Over time, people begin to really respect and admire you. One, because they know how hard it is. But number two, because, like, you know, inherently people, they like to see other people like doing good for themselves, right? Especially if they care about you, right? If somebody genuinely cares about you, like they want the best for you. And so when you make that decision and ride that path, it inspires other people, gives other people hope that like, hey, this guy did it, maybe I can do it too, you know? And the ripple effect of something like this goes so deep. I mean, unimaginably deep, you know, it's wild. You know, I just hit 2 years sobriety last Wednesday. Congrats. And when I injured my shoulder and I told myself I wasn't going to drink, I had no idea I'd be here doing this, you know, but now like, yeah, TikTok over 100,000. I've got 25 plus million views. Like, it's wild, like the ripple effect that this has caused. And it was simply a decision to let go of what I knew wasn't serving me. And in the moment, it was the hard and scary decision, but I worked through it. I worked with people who, you know, could guide me. And yeah, now we're here on the other side and, you know, on a mission to help inspire and change thousands of more lives.
I love that. And your mission is it's off to a fantastic start, and it's only going to grow from here. So I can't wait to see that grow. This is kind of a simple question for you. So you have people that come to you and they ask for help. They want to stop drinking, and then they start to stop. Right. And then I can almost guarantee they inevitably ask you the question, what do I do now? What do I do with my time? What do I do with my, I don't know what to do now. I don't know what to do for fun. I don't know how to spend my time, because all their time was spent thinking and doing the drinking. What do they do?
Yeah, good question, man. And that's a really common one. You know, when we've spent the last 5, 10, 15, 20, sometimes 30 years of our life drinking, and alcohol is woven into the fabric of everything that we do 3, 4, 5 days a week, we start to lose our identity. We start to lose our sense of self, because everything sort of becomes oriented around alcohol. We do enough to get by, but then we're effectively intoxicated for 50% of our life. And so when we remove the alcohol piece, that's a very common question for many people. And so that's where I come in as a sobriety and life and lifestyle transformation coach, is we start to, you know, identify, okay, you know, who is Chase? What's important to you? You know, what does the perfect day in the life look like? What are some interests, some hobbies, some passions that you've always been curious about or have wanted to explore, but maybe didn't have the guts to, or didn't have the motivation to, because you were drinking all the time and your neurochemistry and dopamine was all jacked up, right? How do you want to be remembered, right? That's the deeper question, that once clarity starts to set in, that's a big question. Because if we can identify what we want the end game to look like, then we can reverse engineer that and create a process to help us begin evolving into that, right? Like, in what areas do you feel the most aligned, right? What are the things that maybe when you do them, or if you can think back to when you used to do them, you found flow state really easily and time just really passed by? What are things that you're good at that maybe come naturally to you that other people have complimented you on and say, you know, Chase, like, you've just kind of got this knack, right? So a lot of it is like redeveloping, helping somebody restructure and redevelop their identity. And I've got a video on my Instagram, and it's like the identity that you've carried with yourself up until this very moment, watching this video, is not the same identity that's going to carry you and get you to your dreams and goals. You have to be willing to recreate yourself. And that's what we do, right? That's where I come in as a coach, is like, and that's why it's hard to do this process on your own, right? Like, think about all the different psychological things that we've just talked about. It's like, when you don't have the map of where you're supposed to go, it can be super overwhelming. And so, yeah, the restructure and the recreation of identity is really key. And so, yeah, it involves asking a lot of questions, and maybe you don't have the answer to all of them, especially in the beginning, right? When you've just been drinking for 20 years, like, you're not going to get the answers to all those things overnight, right? It might take a few months, might take a year, right? But that's what we do. We stay curious, we stay committed, we stay focused on our personal growth, and over time, all of it begins to unfold.
That's huge. And I know I've been through that too, where you have those questions, you don't have the answers, but you have to stay persistent, stay curious. I love that. And what's so crazy about talking about all this is, like, so I didn't do AA. I didn't do any of the other crazy stuff. I just went cold turkey, and I just completely shut myself out from everything, which was tough. And I wish I hadn't. I wish I would have done something more along the lines of what you have, because, like you said, you went through AA, you went through a couple of programs and coaches and program, all that stuff. But you have a very different way of going about the process of quitting and, like you said, reinventing yourself or rediscovering who you truly are. You know, how did you come across that process? And, you know, without giving too much, I don't know if you have like some secret sauce you don't want me to know, but without giving too much, you know, for everybody listening, what is that process like? Because if we're all conditioned to go to AA and then this and that, but yours is so different. Like how does it work?
Yeah, man. So the way my program works is it's a 90-day program, but I don't do like a hard cutoff at the end of 90 days. If people still feel like they need accountability and support, we can definitely work something like that out. But it starts with onboarding. So we do a deep dive of their past, their present, and their future without getting too detailed into it. So we start to create a mental map, both of the mind and the body, to see what could possibly be affecting you in a way that's causing you to go drink, right? Because again, drinking is the symptom. It's the very end result of something much deeper, which typically has to do with mental and emotional regulation rooted in some sort of trauma or painful past. So, it's a pretty multifaceted approach where we dig into all that. Then over the 90 days, it involves pretty aggressive lifestyle transformation and doing things that nourish the mind, the body, the spirit, help elevate and increase self-awareness across the board, both within mind and body, increase tolerance to stress. And then I provide them a lot of resources and support to get through that first 30 days, which tends to be the most challenging in terms of like triggers and cravings. And then I provide a roadmap and plan for them to be able to continue moving towards the version of themselves that they envision for their life. In between that as well, like really digging into the healing piece, the inner child piece, which, you know, everybody's got a wounded inner boy, little boy or little girl in them that needs more love and support so that somebody can feel more cared for, safe in their body, confident, increase their self-esteem so they feel like they have more power and control over their life. So everybody is a little bit different based on where they're at, their upbringing, their background, their, you know, the whole deal. And so it's pretty personalized, but overall that's kind of the map.
I love that. Yeah. It's really, like you said, it's not tackling the symptom. We're trying to get to the root source of the disease. We're trying to figure out what is triggering all these other things that mm-hmm. we keep trying to calm with the alcohol, but it can only get down so far, right? It can only get down so far. And a lot of that is really going into reprogramming the mind, which, you know, being in the coaching program that we were both in, that's a huge portion of it. And I love talking about that. So when it comes to reprogramming the mind, I mean, for somebody who isn't very familiar with the concepts, you know, when it comes to alcohol's effect on the brain, because they might hear like, oh, it kind of damages it, you get holes, all that kind of stuff, but they don't really truly understand maybe the implications of that, like what that actually means. So maybe we could dive a little bit deeper into like what is actually happening at that cellular level almost in the brain when it comes to alcohol damage.
Dude, that's a pretty big and complex question. And I don't know if I have all the answers to it. I'd love to dive into the neuroscience a little bit deeper. I'm pretty well versed on how it kind of affects dopamine, which is like the reward and motivation.
Right.
But what's happening there is that when you drink alcohol, it spikes your dopamine for a period of time, and then the dopamine drops below baseline. And when it drops below baseline, that's where you wake up the next day feeling what they call anxiety. You kind of feel anxious and depressed and you don't have any motivation. And then it eventually comes back up to, let's say, a normal baseline level. You start feeling better after, you know, 2 or 3 days. But with the repeated assault and frequency of drinking, that baseline level of dopamine starts to lower. And so now, as you look out into the world, everything seems a little bit more dull, a little bit more boring, and you don't have the motivation to go out and do the things that you would normally do because you've trained your brain and system to become dependent on these large influx spikes of dopamine that you receive from alcohol. It definitely affects that side, the motivation, the reward pathways, in that constant cycle of euphoria and anxiety, and it keeps you trapped. I mean, that is the very thing that causes addiction, is that peak dopamine and that crash, right? Every other drug does it. Cocaine does it. Gambling does it. Sex does it to some degree. Sex addiction is a real thing. Gaming does it as well. Games these days are super addictive. They're designed to be super addictive. Gambling. And so, yeah, that cycle is what really causes problems for people and gets them trapped.
Yeah, no, that's a tough one. I know. I think you brought up gaming too. I used to have that too, where it's like, if I got on, I'm not getting off. You know, I'll watch the sun come up, I'll watch it come down, I'll watch the sun come up again. I'm like, right. Oh, I need to turn this TV off right now. I mean, this has been an incredible, incredible conversation, dude. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about all this. I kind of want to dive a little bit deeper into now the benefits of going through this, right? Like, so we sit down, we make this decision, we decide we're going to be, you know, we're going to be quote unquote better. We're going to stop drinking. We're going to go through your program for 90 days. Everybody go through this program for 90 days. What is the benefit, right? Like, where does this, now that we've stopped drinking, so we're not hurting ourselves internally, we've kind of reduced our dopamine like threshold so we can feel a little bit more enjoyment. But like, where else does this translate into? Because I know I have my own examples, but when it comes to when you stop drinking, not only have you stopped, but where else can it show up as an enhancement?
Yeah, man. Great question. I think everywhere, you know, depending on who you are, your personality, what you have going on in your life. I mean, removing alcohol from your life, committing to doing the inner work necessary to heal and to regulate and to increase your self-awareness, improve your emotional and mental regulation, create a better connection with yourself and with the environment and with the people around you. You feel it everywhere. I mean, first and foremost, most people, depending on kind of where they're at, they'll lose 10, 20, 30 pounds within 90 days. So one, weight loss. Two, you don't look as bloated and puffy. Your skin clears up. Your mind is 10 times clearer in terms of like sharpness, focus, concentration, your ability to sit with a task and not constantly want to distract yourself, your articulation, your communication, anxiety and depression and like double-mindedness and like self-doubt drastically diminishes. People have no idea how bad alcohol is in terms of how it affects our confidence and self-esteem, right? Because it creates that shame-guilt cycle. So every time you tell yourself you're going to slow down or stop and you give in again, like that is destroying your integrity and self-respect and self-esteem. So on a mental health side, you see a dramatic boost. Your relationships get better because now people probably enjoy being around you more because you're not acting a fool or maybe being incoherent. You're saving tons of money. You know, your ability to actually be productive and stay consistent goes up at least tenfold because now you're not nursing a hangover 15 to 25 hours per week. Naturally you become more productive, whether it's at work, whether it's your fitness and exercise, whether it's at meal prepping, whether it's, you know, exploring new hobbies or activities, getting into yoga or hiking or, you know, MMA or, you know, dialing in on your business, like any number of things in terms of productivity. And then just the overall mental health piece, like your power, your self-confidence, your ability to feel like you have control over your life and your ability to go out and create your life. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we all want as a human being is we want to feel like we have a sense of control over the direction of our life. And we want to feel like we are empowered to create and experience a life and a lifestyle that feels good to us, that's aligned with who we are. And when you remove the alcohol monkey off your back and you begin healing and creating homeostasis in your body and clarity, and you transform your mindset and wake up and realize that you never needed this toxic substance that's destroying you in the first place, life really becomes a blank canvas at that point. And it becomes, you know, what do you want to paint? You know, at that point, it's up to you. Do you want to start a personal brand? Do you want to start a podcast? Do you want to start a side hustle? Do you want to go out and become a motivational speaker and inspire other people? Like, do you want to make a career change? Do you want to, I mean, it's, you can do anything.
That's huge. I love that concept. I've always loved that concept of, you know, the blank canvas. You are the artist now. A lot of people, especially in a technological world, we forget that as humans, we are very creative and artistic in multiple facets. So if you're able to quit alcohol, you can now see that. The curtains open, you see the light, you're like, oh my gosh, I can paint. Maybe not actually paint, but you can paint now. You can actually make something worth looking at and worth actually painting. That's awesome, man. So when it comes to making this change, obviously you've got the Stop Drinking Coach, you've got your podcast, got all this content. How has this whole process and this journey affected your life?
Man, in a lot of ways, you know, everything I'm doing now, Chase, was things that I have journaled about. You know, I filled out, you know, I probably have, you know, 25 of these over the course of my 20s. And like I said, like I was, even though I was drinking, I was always really into the world of like personal development and bettering myself. So I've spent a lot of time imagining a future where I'm helping people, I'm inspiring people, I'm using my voice as a way to communicate and transfer energy into others. It's wild, man. Everything that I'm doing is what I once hoped for and dreamed of. And I feel incredibly grateful and fortunate and blessed. And it's wild, man. It just, for me, and I don't know if it's my own mind playing tricks on me, but as I look back on my life from the very moment I was born, everything that I went through within the traumatic childhood and dysfunction with my family and my dad and in literally everything, it all perfectly aligned. Every job I had, every experience I had, every fork in the road, it led me to where I am today. And so as I look back on my life, I wouldn't have it been any other way, because having like really dug into this journey and in this work, I don't know, man. I just, it feels like things are aligned, and I'm super grateful for that. So it's great, man. It's affected me in a lot of great ways. And I just can, and I, my focus and plan and mission is to continue to grow this thing and to reach more people and to help more people and to, I don't know, man, maybe I'm crazy enough to change the world in a way. So we'll see.
I mean, with 100,000 followers on TikTok, 25 million views, and that's just one platform alone within the past, what, 6 months? I mean,
4 months.
Four, even better. I mean, yeah, you're well on your way to doing that. I think you're going to affect a lot more change in a much faster time period. It's going to be absolutely, I can't wait to watch it, dude. It's going to be insane. So on that note, how can myself, the show, and the people listening help you achieve that goal?
I don't know, man. Just I think by having me on here, you're already, you know, gracious enough to help kind of spread the message. So yeah, I mean, you can follow me on TikTok at Stop Drinking Coach, on Instagram at The Stop Drinking Coach, and I've got a website, www.thestopdrinkingcoach.com, and I've got a podcast. You can search The Stop Drinking Coach on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So yeah, I mean, in terms of support, checking out, following the content, sharing it on your page if you feel inspired, or sending it to people who you think might need it.
There you go. I'm going to do that. The show is going to do that. Our listeners, please do that. So we'll be able to help you out. And this has been such an amazing conversation, but we're not done yet. We're not quite done yet. So something that I do on my show that I'm so happy to be doing again, I end things off with two questions. One question might lead us to a ton of other questions, but two questions. So the first one is, going into this interaction, this show, this podcast, what is something that you expected me to ask you that I did not ask you?
I don't know. You asked a lot of really good questions, a lot of like common ones. I don't know, man, you crushed it. I'm drawing a blank.
That's fair. I'm fine with that. So that makes me happy. Awesome. So I'm glad we covered so many bases. So then the last question then, which is kind of along the same route, but I think you're going to enjoy it a little bit more, is imagine you were the one hosting this interview, right? You are the one hosting the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy podcast, and you are interviewing you, right? Bardia is interviewing Bardia. What would you ask? And what would the answer to that question be?
These are good.
And take your time. It usually takes a while, so you're good.
I don't know, an interesting one would be like, what do you think could get in the way of you following through and making this thing happen? And I think my answer would be if I were to take another drink again, because I know, having run this play for 14 or 15 years, that alcohol equals pain, right? What traps people is that the first time they have a drink, they create a neural pathway in their brain that links alcohol to pleasure. And then they unconsciously follow that pattern until they hit a quote unquote rock bottom, where the pain is so great that it literally re-imprints a new pathway that says alcohol equals pain. So what could stop me? I don't know, taking another drink. You know, I think that that's the most devastating thing I could possibly do. But I'll tell you that the trick here is that you just take it one day at a time. The way I hit 2 years of sobriety is by stacking a bunch of one days at a time. Still to this day, I don't tell myself I'm never going to drink again. I just wake up, I do my absolute best, follow my routine, and I keep pushing forward. So, yeah, man.
I like that. I like that concept too, of you just said that you don't tell yourself you're never going to drink again. You just take it, I'm not drinking today.
Yeah, that's the real secret. And for everybody who is potentially sober curious or is about to maybe confront this whole idea within themselves, one of the best piece of advice I can give you is don't trip yourself up and start thinking about the future and how am I not going to drink at next week's barbecue and next summer. Like, this journey is designed to be taken one day at a time. If you start tripping yourself up and thinking about what's going to happen in the future, I'm just telling you, that's the wrong thought process. That's the wrong script. That's an error in thinking. That's not how this is done. It's done one day at a time. And every day when you wake up, if there's a new challenge or thing that you need to address, you learn how to address that and you become better the next day. And it's really a one day at a time thing. Eventually, you evolve into a person who no longer needs alcohol, and it really becomes second nature. So it's not like you wake up every single day and say, okay, here we go, another day. Like, you know, within a few months, it just becomes automatic and second nature. So keep that in mind. The pain that you feel, the discomfort that you feel in the beginning, it's front loaded. And on the back end, everything becomes so much easier.
Man, that is powerful. That is so key to realize, is that just as how, you know, you could take one drink today and then it could stack up and it becomes an unconscious new thing where you start drinking again, the opposite is true, where you start not drinking just one day at a time until after a while it becomes an unconscious thing. You just don't do it. And so you realize one day, oh wait, I haven't had a drink in, like, you know, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, right? Like, it's been a long time, and you don't even think about it. It just becomes second nature, like you said.
Yeah.
Awesome. Do that. Now that is a banger to end the show on right there.
Yeah, man. Bardia, great question.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to go follow him on all of his social medias. Go check out his website. I'm going to link them all into the description for this show. And until next time, stay healthy, get wealthy. Take care.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Chase.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy podcast. Be sure to subscribe on all platforms, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you are enjoying this podcast from. If you know someone who could benefit from the message you heard today, please do not be a stranger. Send it to them. You never know how much it could impact someone's life. I am your host, Chase AP Henderson. And until next time, stay healthy, get wealthy.